on 1116 SEN. Hungry for sport with Kevin Bartlett for Audi Penfold Burwood, celebrating 50 years of the Penfold family.
9:07, good morning and welcome to the program. Interesting comments from AFL Players Association boss Paul Marsh regarding discipline at clubs. Charlie Dixon and Jack Martin were stood down from playing round 10 last week against Sydney after having a glass of wine the night before the round 9 game against Hawthorn. It's worth debating, was the penalty too heavy-handed? Yes, players broke team rules and have to be penalised, but was the suspension a sledgehammer effect when a rap over the knuckles would have fitted their footy crimes? A fine instead of a suspension could have got the message across. I agree with Marsh that clubs have to be careful they don't go too far with this stuff. Dixon and Martin's error of judgment has to be at the low end of the scale. I doubt a glass of wine with a meal would affect one's performance. Gold Coast is struggling on and off the field with players disobeying the club's drinking bans after games. But was the suspension fair to teammates, supporters and sponsors? I don't think so. I'm KB. That's my take.
Clubs have been penalising players and we're seeing players missing games for, you know, what I think are reasonably minor offences. And whilst we respect the right of the player leadership group and all the clubs to deal with the players from a disciplinary perspective, I think we've also got to just take a deep breath sometimes and remember that players aren't all perfect citizens. They're human beings, and I just think we need to be a bit careful if we don't go too far with some of this stuff at times. And I think it's really important that there's due process when a player is being disciplined. So for this particular issue, the decision was made. What those two guys did is probably at the minor end of the scale.
I sort of tried through the pre-season just having sort of half a glass of red wine and just sort of took the edge off and wasn't feeling sort of crap in the morning. So, and it's sort of something that I took into the Friday night before a game. I didn't go about it the wrong way and I take full responsibility for what I did, and I've got I backed the leadership group with what they did with suspending me.
9429 1116 is our famous talkback number, 0433981116 if you want to send through an SMS. If you want to tweet at KevinBartlett29, or you can tweet at Hungry for Sport. Fans happy when they see players suspended from playing games for what seem to be minor offences. Give us your thoughts on that, 9429 1116. Coming up, the buzz, Johnny Ralph is going to join us, taking your calls on all things sports, so you can always set the sporting agenda. What's on your mind? Steve Salisbury is the man from Sacramento. We fix your golf swing with Rowan Dummett and Brian Waldron, the business of sport. But coming up, the buzz.
Well, I'm a king bee, baby. Want you to be my queen. Together we can make honey.
On Hungry for Sport, John Ralph.
Get on to Johnny Ralph.
That's what we always do on a Wednesday. Thank you, Jeffrey. G'day, Buzz.
Hello, Kevin. I'm interested in your take. I couldn't disagree with it more, though. This wasn't just a tiny slip. This was a significant mistake that was absolute willful disobedience that just smacked of not having any regard for what Rocket Ed had told him. Charlie Dixon looked at the fellow players in the eye, the leaders, and he said, yes, I will agree to this three-week alcohol ban. And then he did exactly the opposite thing. Now, would they have played him in a prelim or a grand final? Of course they would. If lying is footy's second language, as you often say, well, double standards are probably the third. But Dixon is a repeat offender, a bloke who has been told he needs to change his ways. And would fining him have done anything towards that? Absolutely not. I think
We don't know that.
Well, I think they've tried to do those kind of things, whether they've fined him before or whether they've just warned him that he needed to change his ways. He hasn't done any of that kind of stuff. And I'm really worried that Charlie Dixon, despite what he said there, by all accounts, was angry with the punishment. He cared so little about it that he didn't even pay his minibar bill. Now, he says there, I had half a glass of wine to take the edge off. Do you reckon it was half a glass of wine or was it a couple of glasses? Look, I'm a bit worried about Charlie Dixon. And again, I'd say, Charlie, if you love this club, you roll your sleeves up and for the second half of the year, you play great footy and then you sign a contract there. But I think Charlie might feel it's just a bit easier to just say, hey, a lot of clubs are going to offer me $800,000. I'll take the money and run. And even though I invested in this club when I signed up as the first player, it might be a bit hard there. And maybe they're challenging me. I think for his lifelong lessons, it's time for him to commit to the footy club and commit to what the club is trying to do. Change culture. I don't think he's doing that now.
Do you think, though, that the crime of Charlie Dixon and Jack Martin was good for the fans for that they actually miss games and make sure, you know, not competitive as a football club?
Well, if this was a grand final, if this was them trying to roll into the finals, it would have been a more difficult position.
They would certainly play them if they were in the finals. They would. Certainly play them.
But they're not in the finals. And the point is, this is the perfect time to make a stand. Now, would they have beaten Sydney? Probably not. But making this decision might allow them to win finals down the track. It might allow the penny to drop. Now, look, Charlie Dixon, I would assume that he should be a mature young lad. He's not. But if he does it, and then Jack Martin says, this is great, this bloke's... You know, 25. He's effectively a leader. Mate, I can do it. And then the next young Indigenous lad that comes in, he says, well, Jack Martin's doing it. So it becomes a slippery slope. If a bloke who should be standing up for what the club believes in doesn't do it, well, it just is a drip feed. It's a slippery slope through the entire football club. I agree it's only half a glass of wine.
You don't get away with anything because you're going to be fined and exposed. And then if you become, you know, a regular person who steps out of line, well, obviously the penalty becomes greater. But I'd like to think that Paul Marsh, I reckon, is onto something here. I think clubs, you know, feel now that they've got to suspend players. It's a sign of strength. You know, this club's got enormous strength because, you know, we've decided to drop Charlie Dixon and drop Jack Martin. I'm telling you, it wouldn't happen if there was something at the end of it. They're at the moment, they're not going to play finals, so we can be really strong and we'll come down hard and we'll show we're a strong club. But if they were playing finals, I'm telling you now, both those players would have been playing for that misdemeanor. So, having a glass of wine the night before.
So let's roll through what would happen.
How much does it hurt your performance, by the way? Just a matter of interest. I don't drink. I'm just a matter of interest. Is that rule too tough of a rule? I mean, I can understand people saying you can't drink in terms of going out and getting yourself blind. And as a result, you know, you're staggering around and or your reflexes are gone or, you know, you feel crook and all that sort of stuff. But the fact that someone may have a glass of wine, that rule is pretty rigid, obviously, in a lot of clubs. And I'm a non-drinker, but really, does it really, really affect anyone? Would it affect anyone?
I don't think it would affect your performance the next day, but it is the symbolism of what it means. It's sacrificing something. Okay, we're playing terribly. Yeah. No one seems to be interested. So let's give ourselves a alcohol ban for 3 weeks. It is something that the club could do to try and reinforce its standards. Now, was that the right thing? I don't know. But once you institute that, you've got to allow your players to follow that through to the letter. Now, I would say that if he
needs... But we brought the ban in because it's just something to put a ban on something so that everyone has to agree to it and go along with it. I mean, could they
say... line in the sand
a ban,
moment.
No one's allowed to drink a pot of tea. No one's allowed to eat oranges.
But whatever...
We've got a ban on ice cream.
So do you think that Melbourne's paleo diet makes them a better club? No, but it is a commitment. Us together are going to do something to change our fortunes. Does a glass of wine actually affect anyone? Of course it doesn't, but it's actually a bit of symbolism. And the fact that he totally chose to disregard it on the first available opportunity, I reckon that's more important than a glass of wine. If a player goes out and has half a dozen cigarettes and a couple of pots in his own private home on the Wednesday before a Friday game, I don't care. Unless they've expressly been told not to.
What's the ruling with smoking these days at AFL clubs?
I would imagine that clubs would say that it's not on, that it's going to affect your lungs and your VO5s and all those kind of things.
Any players smoke in AFL football these
days? I'd be stunned if they did. I'd be absolutely stunned. My point about the bans.
Malcolm Blight used to smoke.
He did. I think
even as a coach, he used to.
Did we saw some of those Ellis 70 photos that were put out and blokes were having cigars after games?
Yes, it was a photograph. Was it Tossel? Peter Tossel?
It may well have been.
The other day in the paper, he had a Cuban cigar in his mouth after the game.
And why not? Kevin, my last point on this. Clubs have banned players and it's worked. Stevie Johnson. It was a 6-week ban, and I understand it was the first couple of weeks of the year rather than the last 6 weeks. It worked. It turned him around. Matty Stokes, Toby Green, Stephen Motlop, the proof would be in the pudding there. So, look, it's become a trend. If you want to smash a player for absolutely nothing, well, I would disagree with that. But when this bloke is just laughing at Rodney Eade, he's looking at Rodney and saying, mate, whatever you want to tell me, I don't give a stuff because I'm Charlie Dixon and I've got a big beard and I'm a star. If he wants to do that...
You don't like Charlie Dixon, do you?
I love Charlie Dixon. I love the player he can become. I don't like the player he is right now because I reckon he's wasting his talent.
But are we putting rules in place just for the sake of having rules in place and therefore coming down like a sledgehammer? That's just the question I'm asking. I mean, I don't actually drink, so I don't know whether or not having a glass of red wine... You might have a glass of red wine every night with your meal, for all I know. Mm-hmm. In fact, I think there was a couple of players that went out and did that from the Gold Coast, and they said because they went out with their family...
And Charlie might have been one
of those,
that
was okay. Yeah. So what they're actually saying is that the actual drinking part is not a problem. It's just that we've made a rule that you can't drink, and therefore, you know, if you break that rule, we're now going to suspend you from playing.
Well, if you can't have line in the sand moments and you can't actually follow those ones up for 3 weeks, it wasn't a year-end drinking ban. And I understand that some players need a glass of wine after you've played a great game of football, maybe to let off some steam. But if you can't follow through on a three-week drinking ban after all that has happened at Gold Coast, well, I've got to worry about you.
We'll take a break. We'll come back and we'll take more of your calls. Also, before we go to the break, Chris Judd retired yesterday. If you want to make a comment about Chris Judd, what he's meant to you in your football life as a supporter or follower of the game, and you may want to make some comments there. I think that one of the interesting things I read today was that there was a chance that instead of Josh Kennedy going to the West Coast Eagles, that Andrew Walker was pretty high up on the list. Now, I don't know whether in the end Carlton pushed Walker to West Coast because he was a Western Australian boy and they thought, well, this will be more acceptable
Kennedy,
because
we
do want to hang on to Andrew Walker, who at that stage
looked like
he's going to be a star and number two draft pick. Whether or not they decided to keep Andrew Walker and pushed Kennedy to the West Coast, or whether they could have kept Kennedy if, in fact, they had have done the deal with Andrew Walker.
Yeah, I spoke to Greg Swan, and look,
coming out.
Swanee's told me before that they tried to push Brendan Vavola, and West Coast said, no, 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 we're not having any of him. But he had never told me before, we put in today's Herald Sun, that Walker was that man initially.
Ooh.
Eventually, Kennedy was, West Coast turned their mind, they said, look, no, we want the key forward. We want the West Australian because we'll be able to keep him. But it got me thinking about Sliding Doors moments. If you'd been able to keep Josh Kennedy, might you have been closer to a flag? Might you have won a flag? And one of the great Sliding Doors moments in sport, I always think, 86 PGA, the shot from Bob Tway gets hold.
Mm-hmm.
Sharkey loses another PGA championship. Yeah. If he had won that tournament, would he have gone on and won 6, 8, 10
Same
majors?
Same with Larry Mize, though, at the
Larry Mize,
Masters.
Mize the year before, the year later, 87 Masters. So if a couple of those incidents had gone his way, and all of a sudden he'd won that American Open. So give us your Sliding Doors moments. If just some small moment in time, if you'd been able to keep that player, or if something had happened, if you'd won that flag, would other things have followed on from then? I love the Sliding Doors moments. So if Carlton had been able to keep Josh Kennedy, might things have been different. Might Juddy have been able to win a flag at West Coast and then another one at Carlton.
Also, a lot of people are saying he's a game changer in his sport. Chris Judd is the 193 or whatever it is, 194 midfielder, exploding away from packs. And, in the old days, if you're that size, there was a good chance you may have even been a ruckman. So he was a game changer. Who have been the other game changers in sport?
Oh, I like that.
When we come back, I'll tell you who I believe was the biggest game changer in the history of sport.
I encourage our boys to have a beer. It's interesting. If you're not injured, if alcohol's not going to have an impact on your recovery, at the right time we want to get together as a group, particularly, well, any footy club. It's a long year. If you wait until the end of the year, you've got a chance to have trouble when it is.
Yeah, absolutely.
So use alcohol responsibly, given that they're probably going to use it even if you don't. Let's be smart. Let's treat them like men.
There's Alan Richardson saying, let's treat them like men. Let's be smart. And even you can have a drink if it's not going to really affect your performance. So, that's the sort of thinking I think it's good for AFL football and for clubs and that to at least discuss and debate whether or not sometimes we make rules just for the sake of having a rule and giving the impression, that we're under full control here.
So maybe putting that three-week ban in place, it could have been a mistake, it couldn't have been, it might not have been. But once you put the rule in place, then you've actually got to follow it through. Because if you don't stand for that as a club, you probably stand for absolutely
sweet
bugger all.
You get a fine. Michael has joined us from Geelong. We'll take some calls and then I'll come back and I'll tell you who I think has been the biggest game changer in world sport. Michael, g'day, Michael.
Hey, how you going, KB and Ralphie?
Good, thanks.
G'day, Michael.
Walshy, when he was appointed coach of Adelaide, wanted a drinking ban. He took it to the leadership group. They went to the players, came back, no. So, Ralph, you sound like a real wowser.
Hey, look, I had a couple of scotches last night, a couple of glasses of wine.
Ooh.
Look, I'm pretty wild. I'm a wild child, aren't I? Mate, drinking bans as
Did
a whole...
Did that stop you from writing for the Herald Sun today?
It didn't. My point is, I don't care about the glass of wine in itself. What I care about is what it said about that culture. So my point is, have a drink if it's a seven-day break. I don't care. Have a drink if it's midweek, as long as you don't get caught if it's in the privacy of your own home. Don't do it as you're Stevie Motlop at a football game where Hawthorn players' relatives were. My point is, it's what it said about Charlie Dixon and how much he cares for his footy club. I don't think he cares for him very much right now. It's not about an alcohol ban per se. It's about him putting his middle finger up at his fellow players and at Rodney Ead.
Anyway, it's just a topic that I think is worth discussing because it was brought up by Paul Marsh. Ty's in Springvale. G'day, Ty.
Hey, guys. I'm with you, Ralphie. I don't think it's not even about the alcohol. It's about Rocket trying to change a culture in a club that that's obviously got some deficiencies. And you spoke about it before with the guys like Stokes and Johnson. And, you know, these are guys that have come from a club that have, you know, worked hard to build that culture, and that's why they get the rewards. And that's what Rocket's trying to do. It's not about the alcohol. It's not about the glass of wine. It's about setting the rules and setting the expectations.
Yeah, but the point I'm making with the rules is that, look, they've done the wrong thing. No worries about that. Don't do it. Mm-hmm. Don't do it. But the fact is they did do it. But every crime doesn't have to be hit with a sledgehammer. That's what I'm saying. And I think that's what Paul Marsh is suggesting too. Yes, I mean, unfortunately, every club is going to have misdemeanors during the course of the year. Same as, you know, I'm going to drive over 60 and I'm going to get a speeding ticket. I don't want to. I know the laws. I know the rules. But at some stage, I'm going to do that. But, you know, I don't want to be hit with, you know, lose my license for 3 months and not drive for 3 years because I've done 64.
So maybe here's another way of looking at it. Okay, you don't fine him because for me, a bloke who might be on $800,000 next year, what does he care about a $3,000 fine? So maybe you make him do, I don't know, 30 hours of footy clinics. Maybe you make him do some awareness to actually help the likes of Jack Martin in their rehab. Maybe you look at it differently. My point is, a fine, he goes, hey, I just kicked 5 goals against Sydney. How good am I? Oh, yeah, that fine. Who gives a stuff about that?
Well, you could do that. But what I'm saying is, are we hurting your club and your supporters and your teammates by not having that person out there playing, getting your best players on the field? Now, if they do something that's extraordinarily bad, well, obviously you're going to look at it. But does it hurt your club for something that is really a low-end scale misdemeanor? That's the point. That's the point.
Yep.
Pete's in Arden Street. G'day, Pete.
Good morning, gentlemen. Kevin, you're part of the problem. This is another example of where you turn the offender into the victim. Dixon has a contract with Gold Coast Suns. Part of that contract is to abide by the rules established by the club or even by the playing group or whatever. And if he doesn't want to do that, then he suffers the consequences.
Correct. No, I'm agreeing there with you, Peter. I'm just saying, are the consequences too heavy?
Look, Collingwood did take a stand with their players with... what was it, Didak and Shaw?
He's Shaw.
Now, things changed there, of course, that they were seen to have lied to the club, but they did draw a line in the sand. Some people might say that the culture didn't change too much after that.
No, but the point there is that originally, my understanding, I'm going back a few years now, I don't think those players were going to miss too many players at that particular point of time. But then it was found out that they actually embarrassed Eddie McGuire and the Collingwood Football Club, and I think the captain and the coach, because they stood up for these players and then found out that they actually told a lie, that one wasn't there, and then he ran down and he was in the car. All those sorts of things.
One was shooting Kennedy.
So finally, they had to. That's right. Yeah, Kennedy was on the grassy knoll, all sorts of things. So finally, Collingwood were embarrassed to actually have to do something, and that's why they finally missed. But I don't think originally they were willing to find those players, but I don't think they were willing initially to miss games and also miss finals, which I think they eventually did do.
And some would say that as much as Mick later said, oh, we were very keen to rule them out for the finals, some inside that club still say, no, Mick didn't want him to miss finals, but we
Well, they didn't originally.
No, but some would say that Mick never ever wanted them to miss finals, and yet others at the club forced him and said, Mick, if we don't change our culture, well, we stand for nothing.
Sean joins us in Hoppers Crossing. G'day, Sean. Lost Sean there. We'll come back. Johnny's in Richmond. G'day, John.
Hi, guys. Yeah, I just want to talk about the sliding doors.
Yes.
I'll give you two. Was that Liverpool? Picking up Wayne Rooney when they had a chance when he was a kid. They let him go. I mean, that would have been a bit of a big difference there for Liverpool for the last 15 years, probably.
How did they let him go, Wayne? What was the situation, how they let him go?
Oh, well, they just didn't fancy him when he was a younger kid, like under 10s or something like that. They didn't see the potential in him and just let him go, actually, yeah.
What was he, could he go into some sort of academy for him or something like that?
Yeah, that was it, like back in the
day. And then obviously Everton and then got poached by Man U and the rest is history.
Okay, so originally he could have been part of a Liverpool academy.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
Okay, and the other one?
And two, just because of the NBA Finals week, Kobe Bryant being traded from Charlotte to Lakers for Vlade Divac. that was a bit of a
Did no one think he was any good or what?
Oh, well, because he was such a... Well, he was... I think he was one of the first kids to be drafted from high school, that he went straight from high school to the NBA.
Yep.
So I think they probably didn't think his development was there, but, he won... I think he was nearly Rookie of the Year and he won the dunk contest in his first year, so it was pretty good solid first year.
Okay, it turned out to be a pretty good player, Kobe.
Not bad. Having a bit of a battle at the moment, but he's got a few rings.
Did someone say they can't get people to the Lakers because no one likes playing with him? There was an article the other day, or someone was making a comment that you know they're struggling to get people to actually come because it's all about Kobe.
He's all about Kobe. He's a screamer and a shouter and a confronter, and that's.
But the whole game revolves around Kobe,
no doubt,
and not anyone else.
Yeah.
We'll take a break. We'll come back. And we'll take more of your calls 9429 1116 with the Bars.
Got out in four pies and hit the turf. Hayes, this is your moment, Stephen Milne. The ball bouncing in the pocket. It's bounced back towards goal. Oh, Milne ran around it. It's level. It's a point. It's a behind. It's level again.
So there's a changing sliding door moment. Lenny Hayes kicking the ball and that ball bouncing. That's getting a lot of mentions off Twitter.
Now, whose anguished cry was that? Oh, in the background, because I think it said what we all were thinking. What about if Chris Judd too had been taken at pick one rather than Luke Ball? And we know Ball won a premiership at Collingwood, but didn't quite get there.
It's Luke Hodge went pick one.
He did rather, so pick two. So I think they'd be pretty happy with that one. But what if Juddy instead? Because we know that he was a superstar at that stage.
Well, a lot of SMSs are saying if the Pies had got Judd and kept Mick as coach, we would have won back-to-back 2010 to 2015 grand finals. Absolutely no doubt about it, says Rocco from Layla. Michael Barlow was a game changer, paved the way for mature age rookies in the AFL.
He did.
Game changer.
Now, he and James Podsiadly both came through in 2010. What about probably Dean Cox as the rookie?
Yes, coming through.
Yeah, so he was the obviously the mature age just came through, but he was the one that came through and everyone just said, how good's this bloke? Sandilands after him as well. Maybe even Stephen Milne, who I saw running around in the Legends game yesterday on Sunday afternoon. He was still dominating. Yeah, so he was a rookie. So those guys came through and all of a sudden everyone else said, righto, how do we get these kids?
And Podsiadly was, another mature age player coming in from the VFL. My greatest game changer for a sport, there's no doubt in my mind, Dick Fosbury is the greatest game changer in the history of sport. Mm-hmm. He has everyone in the world now high jumping, doing the Fosbury flop. And before that, people used to do the straddle, they used to do the scissors, they used to do, I think it was called the Western Roll or the Eastern Roll, all that Eastern Straddle, all these sorts of names. Then he came up with this idea that you could actually jump over the bar backwards.
So why did no one do that before? Maybe the padding wasn't good enough. And the Australian crawl, why did no one do that before? Why did someone think side stroke or backstroke or my favourite, the back style? What do you call it? When you drag your legs through. Why did no one just think, why wouldn't I just do the overarm before? Some of these things just make no sense. Now, what about Walter Lindrum? Now, he changed the rules of snooker, of billiards, rather.
Yeah. The nursery cannon.
Take us through that. I asked you off air exactly what.
Well, he came up with this idea with the nursery cannon that, you could just, with the white ball, just hitting the red ball onto the next red ball and then not moving him too far away so you could just keep hitting him and hitting. I think they changed the rules for him after a while because after you got to a certain number of points, you had to, I think, re-spot the ball again. But Walter Lindrum, I think his record was something like 2,419 or something like that.
So
it was 2,500.
How often did this, 20 minutes of nursery, it wasn't quite pop black. It wouldn't have been very exciting just sitting there. Now, survival backstroke, I've just thought of it. That's my favourite. You can just do that for hours, the survival backstroke. So the Fosbury flop, I like that.
I can't think of anything else. I asked the listeners, I can't think of anyone in sport who changed the sport so dramatically that everyone in the world now does it.
I mean,
Chris Judd might be an explosive midfielder, but not everyone plays the midfield the way Chris Judd plays the midfield. But everyone, if you want to, be a high jumper, you've got to do the Fosbury flop.
So give us your nominations. I'm sure someone can beat Kevin by the top of the hour.
You probably can. Walter Lindrum, by the way, his nickname, his initials were Walter Albert Lindrum because when he was born, his father was a passionate Western Australian. And he said, as long as he ever lives, my son, he'll carry the name WA. Chris is in Gisborne. G'day, Chris. G'day, Chris. He's down there. Looks like he's at Gisborne. Sounds like he's on the farm down there, is he?
I think he might well be.
Got the goats in the background. Give us a call back, Chris. Chris is in. Let's go to Chris in Point Cook. G'day, Chris.
Morning, Kevin and Ralphie. How are you?
Good.
I'll just find a moment. And back to the 2001 draft as well, this may affect, but 2001 when the Hawks, we played Essendon in the prelim and Crotty hit the post and we had all the momentum and who knows if we, we probably would have won that game and who knows what happens to the grand final. Now, if we made the grand final, we have traded to get the number one pick and then get Hodge.
Well, Essendon were really beaten up, weren't they? And so were, so they got through, got smashed by Brisbane in the end. took them 3.5 quarters to get in front. But it's a great sliding doors. I mean, so often you go, oh, if we'd have got through, we would have won. As Chris Judd said the other day, he said, we're a kickoff for prelim in, well, what was it, late in 2000s. He said, we're a million miles away. But gee, Hawthorn had built up a head of steam. You never know what would have happened. That's why I love that situation.
Well, sliding doors last year at Port Adelaide against Hawthorn. Mm-hmm. They had, I think, several shots to score a goal. Yep. And even at the end, there was a mark taken. I think it was going to be kicked the West off by himself? And I think, was it Hodge or someone like that?
Controversial free kick.
You know, free kick and all that sort of stuff. So there's a sliding door because if they win that and cause the upset, the way Sydney played on grand final day, you think that Port Adelaide might be the running premiers at the moment. So missed it by that much. Brian's from Wangaratta. G'day, Brian.
How you going?
Good, Brian.
I've got a sliding doors. You know, I think it was the late 80s when Sydney sold off Carey and Longmire to North Melbourne.
There's a sliding door, absolutely, because they turned out to be, you know, the two gun forwards and just champions, weren't they?
They did. And look, I spoke to, I can't remember his name, the bloke who actually sold them off.
Greg Miller did the deal.
And look, the fellow that sold them off, it's been painted as him just having no idea whether they're any good. And I remember he said to me, look, we knew how good they were, but we were selling off Warwick Capper.
You know,
it was a fire sale.
They broke.
Yeah, absolutely broke at that stage. And so he said, look, we're in a very vulnerable position. And Greg Miller was very canny to be able to lure those blokes south. But I think it's been painted as Sydney having no idea. It's just that they were just destitute at that stage. And so everyone came running and it was a fire sale.
Sam joins us from Rosanna, wants to talk about a game changer in tennis. G'day, Sam.
Good morning, gents. How are you?
Good, thanks. Who's the game changer?
For me, Bjorn Borg back in the 70s was the first player to use a double-handed backhand, and subsequently every new age tennis player uses a double-handed backhand.
Look, there was a great Australian player. I need our tennis historian. Sometimes I get these names mixed up, but it may have been Adrian Quist. That's one name that comes to mind, but there may not have been Adrian. But there was an Australian player who was more successful at doubles, I think he was. But he actually used the double-handed backhand, so I think we're going back into the 30s. So I need some tennis historians to get on the line and just confirm who I'm talking about. But
well, Stan,
so I don't think he was the first, but I suppose as a singles player on the world stage, he certainly gave it credibility.
Stan Wawrinka, that sublime one-handed backhand that won him the French Open title. Not sure we've given him enough credit
for
that.
Was it Bromwich who had the double-handed backhand? One of those guys, anyway.
Okay, so get off the SMS. But Stan's win over Djokovic, who has been white-hot, because it's the French Open, it's over in the early hours of the morning. I mean, that is an extraordinary win. I'm not sure we've given that enough credence, because this bloke's, as he says himself, not in the top four, and yet he was able to beat the best on a surface he loves. What an extraordinary effort.
I think Sam's onto one game changer when it comes to Bjorn Borg, and that is that a person who could win the French could go across then, not being a grass court player, but being a clay court player, as Borg was, to go across and win, you know, Wimbledon on, you know, was it 4, 5, or 6 times in a row, playing as a clay court player with his, with the loopy top spin as he played on clay, that people said, well, you've got to serve and volley. It must serve and volley. Now, he could serve and volley, but he wasn't a serve and volley player. So I reckon he was a game changer there, where it showed people, you know what? If you just went to Wimbledon and played your normal game as a clay court player, you might have a chance of winning, because a lot of people think that Ivan Lendl, if he had just played as a clay court player, or, you know, not try and serve and volley like everyone said he had to, he may have won Wimbledon, you know, because
Look at Sam Stosur.
He was trying to do something he was no good at.
Sam Stosur totally has failed to go from clay to grass. And so it is a really difficult transition, and yet these blokes just made it look easy.
Eco Garage Doors, of course, always bring you the buzz. They've got a special on for the month of June. Eco Garage Doors are going to donate $200. That's right, $200 from every insulated garage door sold to your nominated sporting club or charity. So we've all got a charity close to our hearts or a local sporting club, so it's your choice, and Eco will send $200 on your behalf. So you get in the garage door, and $200 goes to your favourite sporting club or charity. So give Eco a call for a free quote on 9703-1500. That's 9703-1500. Or visit them online at www.ecogaragedoors.com.au.
Bickway for the win! Pandemonium!
The buzzer!
on Hungry for Sports. Which magical moment caught your attention over the weekend? Find out if it made Ralphie's buzzer beater.
Yes, the buzzer beater, and of course also looks into his crystal ball for the buzzer beater as well.
My buzzer beater today is North Melbourne. They just had to get it done. Anyway, anyhow. Now, it also involved Boomer Harvey. I don't know, cheating, being cheeky, whatever you want to call it, knocking the ball out of Pritis's hands and proclaiming to the umpire it's a 15-metre penalty, and that's what happened. If he'd done it in the first minute of the game, I don't know whether I would have liked it. But Boomer Harvey, he just knew that North Melbourne needed to win. And that's exactly what happened, and I doffed my cap to North Melbourne. Now, my prediction is that I reckon that it might be Devon Smith, it might be Hoskin Elliott, I don't know who it'll be, but someone will go down and annoy the hell out of Oxley from Melbourne, from Collingwood on the weekend. Roosey can tell us whatever it was the player's fault, and
they're
we should
deaf.
Have manned him
they're
up, etc. It's their deaf, there's a Boeing 747 going through, all these different explanations. But as the coach, he needed to make sure that Adam Oxley was manned up, and he didn't. And you might say they lost as a result. So that's my prediction that... So you certainly won't be getting 14 intercept possessions and 8 intercept marks, Adam Oxley. They'll make his life hell on Sunday afternoon at the MCG.
Okay, the buzzer beater, of course. Well done. David joins us in Hillside. G'day, David.
Hey, Kev. Is Oxley eligible for the Rising Star?
I would assume so. What do you have to be, under 22?
Under 21, and you would have had to play less than 10 games
that
before
might be
the
his
start
issue.
Of the season.
We'll look that up for you. Hey, now, someone has suggested that Wilt Chamberlain changed the rules of basketball.
Yes.
So I had a look at this. I still can't get my head around it. Now, it says here, when he was in high school, he had a unique way of shooting 3 throws. He would stand at the top of the key, throw the ball towards the basket, take 2 steps, jump towards the rim, and jam the ball through the net. So players can now not cross the plane in the 3-throw line. Now, as I looked that up, I saw another one. Now, when Lou Alcindor played basketball for...
Kareem Abdul-Jabbar?
Yes, Kareem, as he was later known. The NCAA felt that he was too dominant a player who could dunk the ball at will. So they forbid dunking in college games.
Well
it was
done.
Called the Alcindor rule. Now, only when he left the NCAA, did they rescind the rule and players were allowed to dunk again. That's just music to your heart.
So he's just too tall.
Yes.
And of course, the basket wasn't high enough. So because he could just stand there and go, bing,
yep.
Bing, bing, they said, no, that's not good for basketball.
And of course...
He's too tall.
Yes, his little hook shot. It became something that everyone used to do. I still remember doing it. The Kareem Abdul-Jabbar little hook. And it was terrible. No one could do it. It was just his beautiful little way of just scoring points at will.
So you're saying with Wilt Chamberlain that he used to throw the ball against the backboard and then take a couple of steps in and then grab it as it came down, then just dunked it.
Well, I don't think against the backboard. Threw the ball up towards the basketball, take 2 steps, jump towards the rim and jam the ball through the net.
So he threw it to himself.
Yes. So if anyone's actually seen that in action or seen some YouTube, like I can't quite get my head around that, but maybe just looped it up. And then,
Well, some of the SMS are saying Wilt Chamberlain, they widened the NBA keyway because of him. Other game changes, Charlie Booth is an Australian. He's credited with inventing the starting blocks in athletics. That's a big game changer. Peter Dacos was a game changer. He was the first person to do the dribble kicks. Now every AFL player is doing them. Sliding Doors 2007 preliminary final. Pies versus Cats. Pies lost by 5 points. Cats went on to beat Port Adelaide by 1,000,000 goals.
And
Pies would have easily beat Power and won the 2007 grand final.
And was that Gary Ablett's beautiful extraction from the stoppage, kicks the goal around the corner. I'm pretty sure that was the moment where Gary became a legend.
Game changer, Terry Wallace. He brought teams onto the ground to warm up. Now everyone does it. He also started the interviewing of the coach as they walked off.
He did.
Now
I think he was,
everyone does it as well.
He might have been being interviewed late in a game in the dugout there. And he was amazing. He was, did he start the Uber flood? He did it effectively against Adelaide when Richmond were playing and Adelaide was unbeatable and he just started that retention game. Yeah, before his time, Terry.
Okay, a break. We'll come back. We'll take your call. Steve is going to be the first cab off the rank.
Nick Davis! Nick Davis! I don't believe it! I see it, but I don't believe it! Class with a capital C!
Fabio Grosso. He's in behind Marco Bresciano. Fabio Grosso. Oh, it's a penalty. Oh, it's a disaster for Australia at the end. And would you believe it's Lucas Neal?
Game changes. Now, Nick Davis, of course, in that 2005
semi-final. Everyone assumes that was the prelim. It's taken on that folklore now. If you hadn't kicked that goal, they'd be in a grand final.
1 second ago, wasn't it?
It was pretty damn good. I'm not taking away from the moment, but I'm saying it wouldn't have got so long into a grand final. They would have had to win again.
And that Fabio Grosso, he went down as if he was shot.
He did, but Lucas
Neal... He staged for that.
Lucas Neal could have known the moment. Couple of minutes left. He did go hard against him. Now, someone off the SMS has said to me, Kelly out of the centre to Lockett in the 96 grand final.
Yeah.
Do you remember the specifics
of
that?
Well, let's see. What I recall about that game was, I reckon we need Sydney supporters to help us out here, but I reckon Sydney might have been 4 or 5 goals up and they were on an absolute roll. Mm-hmm. They were charging. And then they must have kicked a goal, came out of the centre square. Kelly grabbed it, charged out of the centre square, and Lockett came out of the goal square way out in front and... just an easy kick to Tony, goes back, kicks another goal. Who knows?
Shut the door.
Maybe they were maybe 6 goals up. Mm-hmm. I think it was during about the second quarter, but they were... And went over his head. He missed Lockett, and I think they took the ball
Martin,
down.
Maybe, yeah.
Went down the other end, and they got a goal, and sort of that momentum that they had going then, a lot of people think that if he had have hit Tony Lockett, mm-hmm. then the game was all over.
Only 19 years on, but everyone still remembers.
Steve is in Prahran. G'day, Steve.
Good morning, gents. My sliding doors moment relates to the 07 prelim with Collingwood and Geelong. It was Abler that gave us the killer blow for that game, but Steve Johnson was mighty in that game and he kicked 3 goals. And he also kicked 4 goals in the 2011 grand final. And yes. We're all familiar with the magical draft of 01, where we ended up with Richard Cole. And we could have had the likes of Steve Johnson from that.
Okay.
And they could have got him later on, of course, with that ankle injury and decided not to.
Another sliding door.
It's a ripper from
Steve,
Stephen.
Thanks for that. And we'll catch you tomorrow.